18 minutes now after 8 o'clock in the morning. And Joe Horvath, Yankee Institute for Public Policy, one of my favorite organizations. And I know I speak for my partner Dan, too. We were at the big meeting that they had not so long ago, and just incredible. And you know, one of the big problems that we have here in Connecticut is our budget, and we are way over. We are way over the spending cap. Joe, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
I am just fine, and thank you so much for being with me. You know, when you take a look at the spending cap, the governor is banking on the hope that lawmakers will vote to exclude pension liabilities from the spending cap to the tune, I couldn't believe this figure when I got it, $153 million.
And that's absolutely right. It's one of those things where in the governor's budget, they all joke about economists and assumptions, right? The governor's budget is obviously built to balance, and it's based on some assumptions. You know, some of that is the labor concessions, some of that is revenue growth. But one of those is that the legislature will not allow to lapse the unfunded pension liabilities being put out from under the cap. Because for the past couple of years, it was out from under the cap. That's going to expire. But the governor's budget assumed that $153 million would remain out from under the cap, and that's kind of what allows the budget to balance on paper. But, you know, that's the thing about assumptions, right? It's that old joke about economists and assumptions. You're stranded on a desert island with an economist, and you ask him, what's your plan to get us off here? And the economist says, well, assume a vote.
You know, Joe, this is what I want to ask you. Why do they have to do this? Why can't they let us know just what the true facts are? This is what drives me crazy. And this, you know, the listeners to this program, the listeners to radio and television all over the country go through the same thing. And I can't understand why we have to listen to this, why they can't just tell us the truth.
Well, you know, Brad, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a matter of not telling the truth. I really do think it was really based on those assumptions. Now, that's, in my opinion, a faulty assumption, and even the policy I don't think is the best. I think our spending cap should be as strong as possible. Everything that could potentially be under there should be under there, because ultimately, government only has one way of making money, and that's by taxing people. So every dollar that goes out the door is ultimately on the hook for the taxpayers. So that's the reason why we should keep everything under the cap possible, including these unfunded pension liabilities.
Well, let me ask you another question then, because this is what the people ask. Why do we have to spend so much money?
That's an excellent question. Why do we have to spend so much money? I personally don't think we do have to spend so much money, but there are, you know, there are things that we don't really have a choice about, right? So we have our, you know, debt service payments, and we have our
we
agreed to. But in terms of how that is the core of the question of why the spending cap exists, right? Because that exact question, it's kind of not a loaded question, but it's a question that's informed by the idea that the state spends a lot already, the state taxes a lot already, where's the mechanism in place to control that? And that's what the spending cap is supposed to be. Other states have much stronger restrictions than we do, and we don't even really seem to follow ours very well.
So what, Joe, the Yankee Institute, you guys, by the way, I think you do a tremendous job. That get-together that you had a few weeks ago was just outstanding. So what would you do? What would your organization recommend? Let's put it that way.
All right, well, I'll give you a couple. I'll give you, the personal Joe Horvath, if I could wave the magic wand, and then I'll tell you what the state is looking at, what the Yankee Institute would get behind. Me personally, there's a proposal in Texas right now. Texas has a sort of spending cap thing like ours. It's not exactly the same. It's a little different. Now, what they're proposing to do is put everything under their spending cap and then peg it to the for the ability to grow spending, take it to the lowest of three possible metrics. That's going to be income growth, that's going to be rate of inflation, and it's going to be population growth. And it's the lowest of three. Our spending cap is the higher of two, and that's either inflation or personal income growth. I think if we translate it to including more under the cap and making it a lower of multiple metrics, that's one way to do it. That'd be something I could completely get behind. Now, the Yankee Institute has obviously, as you know, Suzanne, served on the Spending Cap Commission. And in a report I recently released on the budget, it's important that we have something that is very close to being in place and can work if we just use it. If we fully implement it, if we make it strong, and we make it inclusive, and we just use it. So it's basically, the spending cap can work, but we just have to use it.
And again, the answer is we don't use it. But the thing is that I think people, and I'm out a lot, I talk to a lot of people, and I've speeches and so forth on a lot of this stuff. And what people look at you, and they just shake their heads, and they just can't understand it. And I know they go by how they run the household, and it is different. You can't run a household like you do a state or vice versa. But the point being, the upset with the people is that some of the salaries, I hear that all the time, the folks that they have an assistant here, an assistant there, and it doesn't seem that it happens in the state like it does in corporations, where they hire who they need and what they need. And again, I had a gentleman say one night to me, Brad, it's all politics, and who are the folks that are working there? So there is a feeling that you get when you talk about this to a regular audience. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
I understand completely where you're coming from, and frankly, sometimes I wish the sort of mindset that comes from the regular audience would, permeate more often in our public policy, because it's really that much to ask that we run our state the same way you run a household in terms of the finances, where you don't spend more than you make, and you don't sort of try to finagle ways to get out from under your restrictions. It's disappointing, and trust me, I absolutely understand those feelings that that people share with you as you travel around the state.
And again, when you take a look now at negotiations as far as the unions, I'm not putting unions down. They think I am. They do. But I'm not. But the point is, people just can't understand. For example, okay, somebody works overtime. Okay, Joe, they work overtime. That overtime is figured in to their retirement. I mean, where does all that come from? People don't understand how that can happen.
Yeah, and that leads to sort of the practice of the pension spiking that we see sometimes, where your pension payments are going to be larger than your salary has been for the most part. And there are bills, there are proposals, in the legislature that were introduced this year to tackle those kind of challenges. But it's really difficult. It's hard to make the economics argument when people feel like you're coming at them personally, when it's really not about that. It's about, for example, pension reform, right? It's about making sure the program is solvent for all the pensioners.
That's right.
But that often gets misinterpreted, and Brad, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It often gets misinterpreted as, well, we're coming to get you, when that's really not what it's about.
Well, Joe, I hope we're getting better. I have a feeling with this legislature, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so, that there is a different consensus now than there was, let's say, a year ago. We'll see in the end how it works out, but it just seems that there are more people talking from both sides of the aisle, and I think that's one of the things that we've missed over the years, that R's are not talking to D's and the same, and forget where you come from. You represent people who want you to save money and to help people that need it. And this is what I hope this legislature will start to do. I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but I hope that they will.
I hope so too, Brad. The last thing this state needs is another wave of huge tax increases. And I think the legislators get that.
Joe, thanks a million. Thanks, and we'll talk again. And by the way, how many of these sessions like we had a few weeks ago? That was I know it took you quite a while probably to get the guests and to put it together. But are you planning more of these? I think they're so helpful. I really do.
Oh, you're talking about the one from the Mark Twain House on education policy?
Yes.
Yes. So I'm not sure about the next one on education policy, but we are planning a series of small events for Tax Freedom Day, which is going to be May 18th, I believe. But we'll make sure to get more information out on that moving forward.
And when you get it to us, because we, of course, will let the people know. And we'll be there, Dan and myself will be there, and that helps us a great deal on what we do every morning.
Perfect. Absolutely. Thank you, Brad.
You bet. Joe Horvath with the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. That's a great organization.